everything you need to know about the supposed iCloud hack. Here's a hint. Change your password. We'll also look at Rene Ritchie's collection of new Apple Watch bands. And we'll talk about updates to the iPhone, the iPad, the Apple Watch. Soon you will no longer annoy everyone in your movie theater when the light turns on your Apple Watch. Andy Anako has a cabinet and shows us how to build it. And Alex Lindsay has some tips on how to manage your child's sports team. All that and a whole lot more coming right up on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode number 552, recorded Tuesday, March 28th, 2017. Eating pudding in a hot tub. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Audible. To download a free audiobook of your choice with a 30-day free trial, go to audible.com/MacBreak. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one who has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. And by Betterment, a smart, easy-to-use, and less expensive way to invest for your financial future. Get 1 month managed free when you make an initial deposit of $10,000 or more at betterment.com/MacBreak. Welcome to Mac Break Weekly. I am not Leo Laporte. I am Megan Maroney filling in for Leo Laporte. Leo is in Las Vegas on vacation, but we will still spend the next very large chunk of time talking about everything Mac, some iPhone stuff, some iPad stuff, some updates, some betas, all the good stuff. And of course, joining me today is the regular team. Let's start with Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times. How's your cluttered desk of I things today, Andy?
Good enough that I can type on the any word that doesn't involve O, P, L, or punctuation, I can type read. So the clutter situation is well in hand, Megan.
We've also got Rene Ritchie from iMore. And Rene, I know exactly how much he's worked out. He appears to have showered since then, so that's good. I follow his activity on my Apple Watch. How's it going over there, Rene?
It's great. I mean, you did send Georgia Dow back here after we asked you to keep her. But other than that, the whole country is doing great.
And of course, Alex Lindsay from just down the road from Pixel Core. He is here with an excellent connection that we've been working on for a while. You look fantastic, Alex.
Thanks. I'm glad that I'm in sync now. So I'm feeling ready for the show.
All right. Well, I think I'm ready. I don't know. I guess we just get right into it. That's the way that it happens when I watch or listen to it. So let's talk about the Apple iCloud hack, which has sort of been bubbling in the news for a while, and more little pieces are coming up. This, of course, was allegedly the Turkish crime family that said they they said they had a bunch of your credentials, and they, unless Apple gave them a bunch of money or a lot of iCloud or iTunes gift cards, they were going to brick people's phones or wipe them remotely.
It wasn't even a lot of money. It's like a $500 billion company. They asked for $32 in iTunes cards.
Yeah. So,
And I think that the important thing is, if you're going to do something like this, it's really important to have your name not sound like a Disney cartoon. You know, I think that's an important piece of the puzzle.
So does Turkish crime family sound like a Disney?
And they're
cartoon?
From England, and I can't know if they mean the country or they mean the bird. I was really confused.
Yeah.
So should we be terrified?
That's the ISP they're using.
Yeah. Should we be terrified of this?
It is completely farcical, and we should be not terrified but concerned, because what looks like they did is a bunch of different companies have been breached. We know this for years, like Home Depot, Yahoo's lost upwards of hundreds of millions of account details. This looks specifically like LinkedIn and LastFM databases. And people, even without thinking about it, use the same password. They write a password for LinkedIn, and because they don't want to remember many passwords, they use the same password for iCloud or the same password for LastFM. So they found these breaches. They decided to try them on iCloud, found that that they worked, and then bingo, they get into iCloud accounts. And they decided they wanted to make money off of this, and the fastest way they could think of was to say, Apple, give us all your iTunes cards, or we're going to wipe out and lock these accounts. So iCloud has not been breached. No one's broken into Apple servers. But because despite all the education and the best practices and the warnings we give, people do reuse their passwords, there are going to be a lot of people who whose accounts are now vulnerable, and they might not even remember that they're vulnerable. So I think don't be panicked, but unless you are absolutely sure your password is long, strong, unique, and generated with 1Password, LastPass, or something else that can spit out pseudo-random chunks, go and change your password, and please, please, please turn on two-factor authentication, because that'll help prevent a lot of future shenanigans.
I think the upshot of these stories is kind of like when you hear about a home fire somewhere near your town. It doesn't mean that your house is the next to go, but it does remind you that, okay, when was the last time I changed the batteries in my smoke detectors? And hey, wait a minute, I bought those smoke detectors when I moved in here 12 years ago. Maybe I should replace them. And every time there's a story like this about a breach of passwords, Renee's right, it usually winds up being something that the humans did wrong, meaning you yourself choosing, okay, the last password I chose was 123456. If I change the 1 to a letter I, that'll foil everybody. And no, they'll get it. So that gives you an idea to think that maybe I should do an audit of my passwords and either check to make sure that everything that I log into every single day has a unique and really good password, or maybe if you're not using 1Password or another password manager, this is a good time to start thinking about that.
I don't even know how I survive without LastPass for me, but whether it's 1Password or LastPass, we use it, you know, company wide, and I don't there's so many passwords that are required, and I don't even know how you there's no way really. What I would say is pick one, whether it's 1Password or LastPass, pick a password manager. You got to use one if you're going to really do much on the internet, because there's no way that you can create a lot of passwords that you can remember for each site, unless you write them down, which of course defeats the whole idea. And I agree with Renee. Two-factor is important. I think we just have to realize that we're getting out of the time when things were okay to, and you didn't have to be worried about this. You pretty much have to be worried about it all the time. You know, this is the next frontier of terrorism. So we just have to really understand that's going on. Go ahead.
It's like you would never have the same key for your house and your cottage and your kid's high school locker and your gym locker. Like, you just wouldn't use one key for that, because if you lost it, people would suddenly get into everything. And that's a real world example of this. Just don't have the same key for all of your internet accounts. And it sounds ludicrous, but people think it's inconvenient and they don't like the idea. And it's, you know, but you seriously think about it like it's your house key. You want to make sure it's unique and it's really good.
Yeah. Well, that's the weakness of humans is the hysterically funny underpinning of everything. It not only affects users who choose really bad passwords, but it also means that, like, even your bank and other services, they understand that people hate passwords and they lose passwords. And when someone's trying to hack a specific account, they can exploit that person can exploit that by saying, "Hi, it's my wife who set up our iTunes account, and we just set it up, and she needs me to go do this. But I know she's told me to write it down, but I didn't write it down. And so I have my address. I can give you my social security number to prove who I am. Can you just, like, reset my password and change it to our new address? Because, oh God, we changed from Google Mail to Apple because the Google Mail is doing so badly. And because these tech support people are basically programmed to say, oh yes, people are idiots, they forget passwords, this happens all the time, they go into, oh, don't worry, sir, we'll help you. We'll change your email address to this new address you've given me. We'll reset your password and send you an email address to reset it. It really is a big flubadoo situation.
Okay, so long passwords, strong passwords, password manager, two-factor. Do you also think you should regularly change your password? Like, do any of you have like some sort of maintenance where, like, every 2 months or 3 months or once a year you go through and change your most important passwords?
I used to, because when we worked in enterprise, we had policies. We had an Exchange server, and the Exchange server would mandate that you change it every so often. But again, like, to Andy's point, humans ruin everything, because they would figure out the minimum number of passwords you could cycle, write them down on a piece of paper, literally on top of their desk, and then just go, okay, --6, and then just use that one again. So I think it's important to do it. Like, I try to get people to do it once a year, because that doesn't seem too inconvenient. But I think the companies, like, right now, if you change an iCloud password, it's theoretically transparent, but it really starts hitting a lot of services. And then every phone, every iPad, every Mac you have, sometimes FaceTime and iMessage will ask you separately. Sometimes iCloud Drive will. And it becomes a lot of overhead. So I think absolutely, if you have a reason for concern, like there is a breach like this of unrelated accounts that happen to the same password and you're not 100% sure, change your password. Otherwise, set like make it national password change day in your house every new year or every spring cleaning day. And then you'll do it as part, do it as a family as part of that project.
I have to admit, I tend to update it sitting in when I'm waiting for planes, you know, like, I have nothing to do. And so I'll change a bunch of passwords. And that's, I don't know if that's the best. I only do it, by the way, when I change those passwords, being a little paranoid myself, I only do it when I'm connected via my phone or something. I won't use the airport Wi-Fi. That's probably not. To me, that's a big open gate.
I do set a recurring item on my calendar for really my bank password, my main email password, my private servers. Those are things where I do have an email alert that pops in to say, oh, by the way, have you changed these passwords? I don't change everything, but nonetheless, if you're not diligent, there are times where things auto-complete and auto-fill in makes you forget that maybe you chose this password 8 years ago before you decided that four letters is no longer strong enough. And so you'll be surprised that I was still using a really old password on something that was not important when I signed up for this 9 years ago, because I signed up for it just to try it out. But now I found myself using it over and over and over again. And that's when I realized, oh, perhaps it shouldn't be that name of that movie character that everybody knows I like. And, you know.
Oh, Google bought that financial investing company. Maybe Logan shouldn't be my password.
So, okay, our next story is pretty similar. I think with your advice, Andy, is like just because there's a fire somewhere, maybe you should check your smoke detectors. It's the Vault 7, the dark matter, the WikiLeaks that keeps coming out. There was another dump last week that was more that directed it at Apple holes in iOS. The sonic screwdriver, which I've learned, is from Doctor Who. Thank you, everyone.
Yes.
I learned so much here. So is this WikiLeaks information something we should worry about, or is it enough to say, get all your updates, get them regularly, and again, use two-factor?
Yeah, this was pretty much a damp squib. Most of the revelations are stuff that if you basically gave me $10,000 to come up with a list of as many hacks that as many hacks as have ever worked on iOS and macOS devices in the past 10 or 15 years, this is pretty much the list I would come up with. A lot of these hacks only affect stuff that haven't been made for a few years, or if you've got a machine that you haven't updated in any way, shape, or form for several years. But it also really shows you exactly the breadth of ways that people have figured out to get into a machine, including if you've ever cracked open a FireWire connector, or excuse me, a Thunderbolt connector, or one of these other connectors, you find it's not just wires that go from the cable into the connector. There's actually a controller of some sort in there that helps do the signaling. And so it's possible to create, because the logic board doesn't suspect that there might be anything weird going on with that controller, that's a good place to insert some code. That's if you've got the right sort of gear, then that's definitely something you can do. But whenever you feel that you're starting to get scared about how vulnerable your stuff is, number one, keep your stuff updated. Update not only your operating system, but also make sure you're running the proper security patches. Make sure that your browser is up to date. Make sure even like your Microsoft Office installation is up to date. That'll insulate you from most, if not all, of the stuff that is just sort of broad-based. They sent the bad people sent up a flare, and any computer that is vulnerable got infected by these spores that the flare threw out. That'll prevent you from that. The things that you really can't prevent is people who have physical access to your machine and a little bit of privacy. So all these hacks they're talking about are if you leave your office for lunch and someone has access to your machine for an hour or even just 5 or 10 minutes, they can install and insert some malware that will then give that person remote control or remote observation. When it comes to things like these hacked ports, we're talking about a compromised device that they have to give to you, and they have to trick you into physically taking this and plugging it in. So it's really not the sort of thing that you need to worry about unless you are working in the government, working for a big contractor, or as Alex often says, that when you travel overseas on business, you just set fire to, you don't bring anything private with you. And then the thing you buy to use while you're in Beijing, you set fire to it before you leave. You never take it with you. So you're fine. It's good to know. Knowledge is power, but don't worry too much about it.
I'm actually more worried about WikiLeaks these days than I am about the stuff that they're leaking, because, you know, everything from their motivations to the way they choose to report stuff. We saw the horrible way that they leaked the so-called breaking of end-to-end encryption in WhatsApp and Signal, which was completely not true. It was, again, physical access to a device and reading messages off those devices. So, and this was when I first saw this, it wasn't clear to me that these were old, understood vulnerabilities that, of course, the CIA or anybody who wanted access to Macs would be using, you know, certainly by now, but from several years ago. And I think they've gotten very addicted to the attention that they get from these things. And that's factored, sort of like Consumer Reports, that's factored into the way they choose to put it in the public eye now.
So
they have to raise money.
Now, I know that when the first WikiLeaks came out, the first part of Vault 7, Julian Assange came out and said, I'm going to be working with these companies. I'm going to be working with Apple to fix these vulnerabilities, which we've then learned are all fixed. Do you think that he's actually in there talking to someone? I mean, do you think that they
fix elections, fix vulnerabilities, he'll fix everything? I mean, I don't understand this anymore. So depressed.
So you don't think that he's like actually talking to someone at Apple and working with them?
I don't think they're interested in talking to him about it. I don't think that they need to. I think that most of these things, they probably already have, as we already heard, they patched most of those things. And even if they didn't, he hasn't given them enough information. I don't think that if there was something they hadn't patched, they either can't patch it in this current piece of hardware, or they have they're now at a point where as soon as you tell them that there's a vulnerability in this area, they can probably find it pretty quickly.
Well, I think talking about two-factor and updates, this would be a good segue to talking about the iOS updates that came through yesterday. 10.3 for your iPhone, for your iPad. There was a new Apple Watch, new Apple TV. Has everyone gotten their updates?
I was so excited. I saw my Apple Watch update, and I was so excited that I might be able to have a watch face that had seconds on the digital readout. But no, I still can't do that. It's just, what does Apple have with the seconds?
Yeah, you can't do seconds with timers too, right? Like you can't set a timer except through Siri.
Yeah, you're just like, like I don't understand. Like, and then my whole thing is, my number one reason for wanting to design my own watch face is just so that I had a production level, you know, watch face that actually had seconds going on it. Because
the activity
watch,
one has timer seconds, go around, you need giant rings to go with it.
Yeah. I don't want the giant rings.
But it gives you.
I think it moves most of those engineers onto the watch band project. They found themselves the shortfall. They might have fewer than 90 new watch bands this year. So they said, boys, girls, I know that you're this close to cracking that seconds on the watch face problem, but we need a way to put blue and brown on the same band. We know you're the people to do this.
Isn't it delightful?
I'm certain, given that there's absolutely none. There's absolutely none. I'm certain that someone has made a decision that there shouldn't be seconds. Like, it makes you nervous, or
is it a battery issue?
No, it's like I said, it's on the activity face. You can, like, they have seconds working fine. If you put on the three ring, like the ring face, you have seconds on there. So they
I don't want the three rings. I just want a black.
No, but I mean, there's no reason they couldn't do the other faces. The thing I find delightful is that they're localizing English now, because they have automaker apps in some countries and car maker apps in others, and they have cinema mode in some countries and theater mode in others. And I think that they've gotten to the level now where everything else is so fixed that they can,
Has anyone experienced like a rude Apple Watch user in a theater where their Apple Watch goes on often?
No, it's the people who text from Samsung devices leaving the bloopity bloops on is the worst. Like, they have the worst sounds and they're loud, and people don't turn them off. And they'll, during the movie, they're going, and you can locate them. It's so loud you can actually physically find them. It's baffling to me.
I've been that person, not texting, but yeah, where I did not realize that, of course, every time, when I'm applauding during a scene and my watch is like blinking on, off, on, off, on, off, on, off. I wish I were joking, like, oh my God, let's turn this. I'm literally like sitting like this until the intermission, because I can't, it's a new watch and I can't remember how to turn that off again. And because if you're in like live theater where almost everybody is really polite, anything that is that disrupts like the audience is, you're immediately like marked for immolation or something. So yeah, that's I'm glad they put that in. And it's really, if you're designing this thing, it would take you a while to realize that you need an ability to say, please don't shine this light under any circumstances. I don't want I'm going to be seeing a show with Rita Moreno or somebody who I'm sorry, that's not her, but there are a couple of performers on Broadway who will just stop the show and start yelling at this person and then run into the audience and take the phone and just throw it. And yeah, you don't want to be that person. That's not worth $300 for a watch. Keep the watch, please.
It is interesting that this didn't come originally, that they didn't think of it. Cause I do remember the first time I was wearing my Apple Watch in a theater and it went on and, you know, I was super embarrassed. So it's good, but you actually have to, I mean, it's pretty easy to turn it on. It's just in the settings, or what do you call that? Swipe up menu in the
control center.
The control center.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's the little drama faces. So it's really easy to turn on. Don't forget to do it if you're in a theater. What about Find My AirPods? Anyone use that so far?
I did the fake version when I lost them in the snow the first time I had them. And then I turned up the music real, real loud and just walked around until I found them. But this is so much more convenient because at a distance, it'll use the same sort of wireless location technology as Find My iPhone. So I'm not saying I'm waiting for a chance to use it because I don't want to tempt fate. I'm very Toby Ziegler that way. But I do like the fact that it's there now.
Does it use the same? I thought it used Bluetooth. So it's not exactly like Find My Friends, or is it?
Well, so... It will, depending on what is near it, like I believe it will try to connect any way it can if you have other devices or if it's at home and you have networks and things. I have to actually double check that. But yeah, as long as you're within Bluetooth proximity, it'll track you down.
I read that if you're – one of the things it does is it remembers here was the last place the phone was when it had contact with your AirPods. So it's not necessarily tracking them directly, but it will say that the last place that – here is where we lost contact with your AirPods. So at least you'll be able to say that – I didn't leave them on the plane. They must be somewhere in the house because the last time it was in contact with the AirPods was here in the house.
Yeah, from what I understand, it's like, you know, how Apple Maps knows where you park your car. It's only because when you disconnected your phone from your car and your Bluetooth, then it knows where your car is. So if someone took your car and drove it somewhere else, Apple Maps would no longer know where your car was parked. So
it's
I think
the Wi-Fi iPads, like they can't tell when, because they don't have cellular, so they can only tell where they were last connected to an internet to a Wi-Fi hotspot.
But what it does do, play a sound, and it plays the sound quietly, just in case you left them in your ears, and that's where they are. So right away you won't. I can imagine myself doing that. And then it plays a little bit louder, and you can also just play it in the left or just play it in the right if you've just lost one of them.
The poor guy, that would be me walking around. Where's my AirPods? Anyone seen my AirPods? And they're just pointing at me. I go, stop pointing at me. Where are my AirPods?
I was flying back from Rome last week and I had not slept for like 30 hours and I was sitting in Denver and I literally went into a panic attack trying to figure out what happened to my phone. And I was holding it. I was like, it was in my hand. I started looking around and I was like, oh, never mind.
Right, I've done that too. It's because it's just a piece of you now, right? But
I know you don't think I was literally surfing like Flipboard, and then suddenly had a panic attack that I don't have my phone. That's when you know you haven't had enough sleep for a little while.
So, do any of you exercise with your AirPods?
Yes,
I don't have AirPods.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I have the free corded earbuds that come with my SanDisk MP3 player that I bought last week. I'm a print journalist in a rapidly collapsing market, I mentioned. but you people, please talk about your $170 earphones.
Well,
every time I go to the Apple store, I stop in and I go, hey, by the way, do you have any AirPods? And they're like, no, come back later. And I'm like, I'm not coming back later. I'm just passing through. You know, I'm just so I'm waiting for it to reach saturation where I can actually buy them at the store.
Okay. Yeah. It took a couple months to get them. But someone recommended recently to me these silicone tips for your AirPods because I like to run and these are my favorite pair of earbuds. Like I have a lot of Bluetooth, but I love that they just pair automatically. And you know, when you're running by a neighbor and you want to say hi, you just pull it out and you know it stops. So I'm going to try them. There are these little silicone tips. These were from the Australian eBay, but I looked on Amazon and ordered some. So hopefully that will help.
They're Martian war hats for your AirPods.
I know. They look like little bunnies.
They do, aren't they?
They're affecting my view of Venus.
they're peeps for your ears.
Exactly. Okay, anything else at CarPlay updates? Anything else exciting about the updates to How about you, Alex? Anything exciting about the updates to you?
Is it new on the phone to have your to get your phone to ring, or on the watch to have your phone ping as easily as it is now? Did they move that?
I was always in the control center for me, because that little, were you pinging yours earlier? I thought I heard that sound.
I did by accident. I was like, but I didn't have the control center comp before.
Yeah, no, that is not new. That is, I have to say, one of my favorite features of the watch, because you can find your phone even when you're holding it in your hand.
For some reason, I guess after my update, all the little pages are gone. Hold on.
The pages I had before.
So now I just have a control center. But I don't have, there was like, I had pages of things that I could look at other than my phone. You know, when you scroll up from the control center before.
Oh.
It wasn't the control center before. It used to be, maybe I haven't updated for a long time.
Maybe.
I don't know. I mean, I have kind of a love-hate relationship with my watch. I think I'm always on the verge of going back to my Citizen. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm just, it's just when the battery's dead, which is often.
Well, yeah, I got the bigger watch. You know, so go ahead.
Yeah, I travel a lot, and it's just one of those things. I travel a lot, and you just get in this position where you can't get it charged, you know, because it's a very, you know, and so it just ends up dead, and you're at the airport, and then I'm like, I don't know why I'm using this stupid thing. But then when people text you and it shows up, then you go back to going, okay, I'll keep it for a little while longer. But I have to admit that I haven't taken full advantage of my watch.
Has everyone used the new podcast widget?
I have
iOS has widgets. that's my relationship with iOS on widgets.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you know, no, but none of you probably use the podcast app, do you? You probably use it.
I do because I use it whenever I need Siri. Like if I just can't get to my phone and I want to say play MacBreak Weekly, and then it'll just go and find it and start playing it for me, and I don't have to worry about using a different app or interface or anything.
Mm. And then, of course, I don't think we mentioned that it's easier to, they remind you to turn on two-factor now with iOS 10.3.
Part of Startup, I mean, this is such a big problem to solve. So Startup Buddy is the system that comes on, sorry, Setup Buddy is the system that walks you through setting up an iPhone for the first time or going through the update process. And it is borderline exhaustive at this point. There's just like Siri and Touch ID and Wi-Fi, like just so many things to set up that I think, you know, everyone is sort of, how can they make this easier? But at the same time, there are things that are important that if you don't get them out in front of people, they would never discover or see or learn. Like activating, SIRI on its own is not really discoverable. Neither is Touch ID. So you try to get that in front of people, but it becomes a longer and longer and longer and longer process. But I think Apple's decided that with all the hacks and the different account information that had been leaked out, that it's important to have two-factor. So now as part of the Setup Buddy process, if you are not already using two-factor, it'll prompt you to set it up. You can choose not to, but it's going to ask you to do it.
Choose it.
Yeah.
I also note there, it's not specific features that was getting me. I downloaded it on my iPad yesterday afternoon. I was really using it a lot last night. It seemed a little bit faster, and I was about to over geek and say, I wonder if they use the new blah, 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 tech, blah, blah, blah. But an Apple engineer tweeted about how they, in 10.3, they decided to tweak the animations a little bit to make some of them a little bit shorter and optimize it here and there. So it's not that the whole thing is running faster. It's that it's instead of giving you here's the wonderful camera move that will take you from the button you just pushed to the dialogue you're just, it's going to, what if we just like made that happen a lot faster? So it does seem a lot faster. You also get the new file system. So HFS Plus is done. And I want to see, I'm so excited about the new update. I didn't screenshot to find out how much storage space I had on the device. It seems like I've got more storage space than I did before, but that could just be something that pre-downloaded it in the background. But it should be faster because this new file system is optimized for the kind of storage that iPads and iOS devices use. It should be more secure. The security is baked into a deeper level. So we should see some under the hood sort of things that improve performance. I haven't seen any reason not to download it yet. It seems to be nothing but upside.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially I hate to say not to download it because it includes the security updates, doesn't it, as well? So yeah. I never want to tell someone not to update. So update.
Yeah, there's only, if you are on a 32-bit iPhone, you will not get the update. Apple pulled it because there were some issues with the update, but it should be fixed back soon.
I think it's like the 5S iPhone 5 and...
5 yeah. and 5C, which is still on HFS. That's the big deal. We sort of totally buried the lead there. Apple File System, AFS,
APFS
is now been deployed. This actually is amazing because Apple replaced the file system on hundreds of millions of devices pretty much without a hitch. Like, I didn't see any widespread panic or lost data or anything. And for anyone who worked in like any of the previous file system transitions, those were ugly, ugly, ugly messes. And yeah, iPhones are incredibly controlled, constrained environments, but I still think it's near a technological miracle that you can just swap and replace a file system like that. So kudos.
Well, yeah, but realize that nobody has any appreciation that there are files of any kind inside your phone. That's how locked down the thing is. But yes, it is a huge transition they made. The fact that things didn't start crashing left, right, top and bottom is a big deal. So there's
people got space back, like gigs and gigs of space back, which is amazing. I didn't expect that.
So I don't think that's why I'd like to figure. I wish that I'd been more careful before I did the update. It's possible that it's optimizing storage better, or it's possible that it's just saying, hey, we no longer need a lot of these library and dictionary files, so we can just, this is all trash, we can suddenly heave out. But one last thing about when we're talking about not upgrading, usually you don't have to worry about it because Apple updates are usually very, very stable. However, if you have a really old device, like if you've got a phone that's three generations old, if you've got a Mac that's three or four generations old, you might want to hold off just to make sure that the new whatever it is supports your old hardware. Particularly if you've got an older iPhone, if you're happy with your iPhone 4S or your iPhone 5, it's possible that there will be a new version of iTunes that no longer can sync your old device. And well, what if I do this through the cloud? And the last version of iOS that is available for your machine does not support the cloud syncing service. And now you're sort of in a bind where you now have to buy a new phone just to be able to update the whole thing. So that's why if you're having an older machine, if it works great for you, that's great. Don't worry about upgrading it. But before you download stuff automatically, it's possible that you won't get the new operating system because it's not available for it, but you will be able to download the new iTunes because it'll run on the old operating system, but it won't run on older phones. So something to Google for before you click that button.
The other new thing in 10.3 is sort of the shaming developers who haven't updated their apps in a long time. Now you can see what apps will, in the future, not work well with your iPhone. What do you guys think about that?
Every bank in the world is now rehiring the original iOS 4 development team that made their app, and it's not changed since then. Thank goodness.
So, yeah, I think that's...
It's just 32-bit apps. If you haven't updated your app for 64-bit, which came out in 2012 with the iPhone 5S, you'll get a warning.
Okay. Yeah, and you can see a list of them. I think it's in general settings, general...
And have they given a date of when they're going to stop supporting it? Is it like the next
iOS 11 informally, but I don't think they've confirmed that.
Right.
All right.
It'll be interesting to see how many apps, you know, get culled in that process, you know, because it's going to be one of those things where we may see, you know, tens or even hundreds of thousands of apps, you know, that just weren't very successful, that no one's really bothered with, suddenly disappear.
Yeah, I only have one in my list. It's settings, general, about, applications. They've kind of dug it in there, but you can probably search for app compatibility to find it. So we were talking a second ago about Andy, about not being able to dig into your iPhone, not being able to get access or do things that you might want to do. And of course, Apple recently bought Workflow, and I want to talk about that and your thoughts on what that means and whether you use it. But first, I want to thank our sponsor for this show, Audible. I've been using Audible for, I think, about 14 years now. I have a pretty big library. When I look through it, it gives a good range of all the books that I've been listening to. So it goes through all the books that my kids have been listening to when they were young. Now they are teenagers, and so they still love to listen to Audible. Audible is a great service, audiobooks that you can listen to on your iPad or your iPhone. Or your computer. They're the leading provider of audiobooks across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. I usually read fiction and I listen to nonfiction. I've listened to some great books over the years on Audible. For listeners of MacBreak Weekly, Audible is offering you a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One audiobook that you might enjoy, that I am enjoying, it's called The Undoing Project. It's about Amos Tversky and Daniel Kahneman, and it's about social economics. It really is a great book to listen to. I have to rewind a lot and listen to stuff again. It's that good. To download this audiobook for free or another one of your choice with a free 30-day trial, all you have to do is go to audible.com/MacBreak. That's audible.com/MacBreak. Do not forget to add the MacBreak at the end of it, because that's that way they will know that we sent you to them. All right. Let's talk about workflow. Do any of you regularly use workflow? Is workflow part of your workflow?
I use it a little bit. I am no Trinity Caldwell or Federico Vettici. I just use it for a few things that are exactly what it's meant for. It's tasks that you do over and over again. It's basically, if you're not familiar with it, it's like Automator for iOS. And given what Andy mentioned before about how locked down iOS is, it's a miracle that this app exists. They are so clever. They're the kind of guys that at WWDC, the day after Apple makes their announcements, they've hacked everything to do far more than anyone, including Apple, ever thought was possible with the new APIs. I cannot stress how smart this team is. I think this is whether Apple decides to leave workflow itself long term in the App Store, because they let Siri go for like a year and then killed it, or they just put them to work on Siri Kit or on a automation kit that's iOS and OS X cross-platform. This is just a stupendously smart hire on Apple's part.
Yeah, I mean, double so, because they're really trying to attach the iPad's future to enterprise. They don't have a way to sell the people who need to buy like 100 Apple computers to issue to their workforces. They don't have a computer that really fits that role, unless you call that the iPad. And so this is why you're seeing so many of these ads saying, "Hey, get an iPad. It's just as good as a laptop. And here's how you can run Office on it. Here's how you can do all these other things on it." That's why they're spending so much money on ads, and buying workflow is a big step forward for all that. It just solves so many problems, because one of the problems that you have in enterprise is that essentially you've got a whole in-house computer company, so to speak, that is building computers and building software just for the needs of that company. And if you have a super locked down system like iOS, you just can't make it work that way. However, this choir lets these IT departments develop a workflow so that when it comes time to get a bid together, or when it comes time to you're out in the field and you've collected all these reports into a document, now here's how you can get this distributed to 8 different places at the same time. You need to train all these employees, all these executives, all these managers who aren't really fascinated by workflows and process. They just want to be trained. Here is the button I push to make the thing that needs to go. So that's it's a very, very, very smart play.
Are you a workflower, Alex?
I played with it a little bit. Made my lights go do different things based on web information. I was like, "Oh, this is great! I'm going to do this everywhere." And then I didn't do any of it. So I haven't done much of it. I do think that the automation in general, I think, is pretty exciting. I've seen some pretty interesting workflows, but I'm definitely going to be. I've played with a bunch of different automation tools, and they're all great. And I wish I had more time to noodle with them.
No, that yeah. 4 hours more in a day, that's what I would like. That's all we
just
need.
Go to macstories.net. They have an incredible workflow archive. And if you subscribe to their newsletter, you get even more advanced stuff, like just hand-delivered to your inbox. It's really, really terrific.
Yeah, that's great.
And it really does scratch the surface at what's possible. I don't know if you've ever seen the Omni Group has a website. I think it's an official. I don't know if it's an official website, but if you go to omni-automation.com, it shows off. They've got this thing called Omni.js, which is sort of a flavor of JavaScript they're doing that lets you automate processes between Omni apps. And the way that it functions, it doesn't look so much like they've created super hardwired pipelines between their apps. It looks like you're just writing JavaScript and controlling apps. So you just like to think that there's a lot that more that could be done with true automation on the iPad. Because I'm going to New York tonight, and I really am struggling between the issue of, do I want to take the MacBook or do I want to take the iPad? Because the iPad is just going to be better for the tasks I'm going to be doing. It's going to be a lot more fun. There's just this one app, actually this week's a pick of the week, that I really want to keep playing with on my train ride down that was only available on the Mac. So it really is a super professional sort of computer to run on. But the sooner we can get real automation things like workflows, like Omni.js, the more things they'll be able to do. Again, it's that one or two things that make me want to take the MacBook for these 2 days in New York. It'd be great if there was only like maybe one thing or even zero things that I would need the MacBook for.
All right, let's talk about the rumor, the AR goggles rumor that that won't die. Apple has been developing AR goggles for a year, says 9 to 5 Mac, or is it the Financial Times, or is this a follow up to the Financial Times? What do you think? What do you think Apple's AR goggle strategy is?
I definitely think that AR is going to be a big deal. I mean, I think that. You know, it'll be interesting to see what Apple has done with it. I think that they've said a year or more. I think Apple's been working on AR for probably quite some time, if they're anywhere near the surface. I think that we've been playing around a lot. It's got us thinking about AR, and we've been doing a bunch of internal development and playing around with ideas around AR. And I think that there are a couple key things to solve within AR, tracking being one of the big things, tracking and really knowing exactly where you are inside of a space. But I think that if you get some of that working, the opportunities are pretty outstanding as far as education, corporate, military, government, those types of things. There's a lot of things that you could use it for.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this before, but Apple has so much money and they've just built prototype after prototyping machine. They can actually go through, if we can talk about it on a podcast or in a blog post, they actually have the resources to explore it and if it makes sense, start prototyping it and then see if it wants to go to market. And sometimes the answer is no, like with the Apple television, and sometimes it's yes, like with Apple Watch. So if there's any product that's at all popular or any sort of technology that's at all trendy, Apple has incredible amount of resources to bring to bear and to see whether an Apple version makes sense, which is why the Special Projects Group does cars and the Special Projects Group does VR and the Special Projects Group does AR and does a bunch of other things. It's to explore and find out which of these should go to market. And then you make 1,000 and you say no to all of them and you make one that makes a lot of sense and that goes. So I think AR, Tim Cook's comments previously are that AR is going to be part of almost everything, the way that LCD or OLED is part of displays now. They'll just be an augmented reality aspect to a lot of the things that Apple does. Whether they make, you know, Snapticles or something similar to that, that'll just depend on whether that makes sense as a product. I don't know if we'll see Apple, you know, for example, if we'll see someone have an iPhone and just strap it to their eyes, you know, like walk around like a Gear VR or something, because that might not be the sort of social interaction experience that Apple wants. But there'll be all sorts of ways to, Tim Cook has talked about Pokemon Go before, and there's probably some sort of unobtrusive technology like Snap-ons or something. I don't know what form it'll take, but there's all sorts of possibilities here.
I just want one that has a heads up display of everybody's name. You know, so it's like, you know, that's Frank,
Megan,
that's
Angie, Alex.
You know, exactly. Like, you know, like I need that one just kind of pop.
You owe Andy $10. Avert.
No. Yes, for me, even if it's only like a stoplight, just one LED that goes green, meaning that you know this person, you've had conversations with this person might be greeting you by name. Yellow, meaning that this is someone you see maybe a couple of times a year at conferences. They're not going to expect you to remember everything. Then red, meaning that, oh, total stranger, don't worry about it. You can say, I'm sorry, I don't know, what's your name? I'm Andy. That's all I want.
I wanted to remember all the things.
My suicide will be postponed by 18 years if I can have those glasses.
Yeah, I just, all the things I forget, like if my, you know, my Audible book I'm reading or whatever it is, I want it to just appear in front of me. But I do think that it could help us make us better human beings by putting, you know, information about the person.
And it's not just the goggles. I mean, like you look at AirPods, and AirPods in the future could say we've detected, you know, Megan's iPhone, you know, Megan, that's Megan. She's got two kids. And it's just whispering this in your ear as you're walking up to have a conversation. And AirPods are so small and intrusive, people can barely see them outside of your ears anymore. We just have all these different, you have auditory reality augmentation and visual reality augmentation, hopefully not too much olfactory augmentation, but I mean, the possibilities are fairly endless.
And I'll be in New York. I'm getting as much olfactory augmentation as I can.
There you go. Downtown San Francisco, roses, I tell you.
So Renee, I noticed you have the red iPhone. It's lovely.
Oh, yeah.
And do you have you don't have a screen protector on it, so it still has the white face.
I've been buying white iPhones since Apple introduced them. I think on the iPhone 3G, and I love the rose gold, and I bought the gold, and I actually prefer white phones. So for those of us who like this is a Canadian flag. I don't know how anyone would want it. There's no red and black Canadian flag, Megan. 100% honest here. I really like this. I know some people really prefer black screens for a variety of reasons. Some people wanted a red screen, but if you stare at a red screen a lot, it starts to affect the color balance in your own eyes. So you want to avoid having a high intensity color that you're looking at. But all this goes away when Apple deletes the bezels anyway. So it's a really temporary problem.
My big question about the red iPhone is, why won't they say the exact percentage of money that's going to the global fund? Why are they being not saying that?
I think it's just one of those conversations where it varies by product and by region. So if you're in Canada and you're in the U.S. and there's different laws and different charities and they just don't want to get into that conversation, they would just rather say, we've donated $130 million to date. And that's a really nice, simple, round number that's easy to rattle off.
Well, so there was also some issues in China. They had removed the product red packaging from it. And there were, you know, some rumors that it was because the Global Fund donates money to HIV/AIDS. And maybe that was going to not be accepted in China. But now there's a report from Mac Rumors, or Tim Cook says that they are donating the money to the product red iPhone 7 that's being purchased in China. So, yes, in case you were worried about that. So at least
it seems to be connected to branding via NGOs and so on and so forth. It's not just legalities within China for how you state that. But it's not changing what they're doing with it.
It's not changing. And people
are and red's hugely popular color. It represents luck and fortune. And
Does this mean they're going to be doing different colors, do we think? Do we suspect that red is just the opening?
No, totally. I mean, they did when they didn't change very much about the design of the iPhone 5 series, the 5S got gold and then the 6S got rose gold. And the 7, because the 7 wasn't that much different, it got jet black. And, you know, we discussed this. We're so superficial. To us, color is a feature. You can not change anything else. Give us a new exclusive color. I mean, people are out hunting shiny Pokemon right now, Megan. Like, we just want things that sound exclusive and are different. And we will go to major lengths to get them. So the color strategy, I don't know if Apple appreciated it at first. Like they started off just because Kim Kardashian was desperate for a gold iPhone, and they started thinking, maybe that's a good idea. We'll do Project Kardashian and see where it takes us. And we bought that phone in droves. People complained, oh my God, how can they make a gold iPhone? And then the minute they released it, it's like, what? This is BS. Why can't I get my gold iPhone? And the same thing I can't believe Apple's doing this. And then why can't I get one? And this is the same thing. People are like, I can't believe Apple's making a red one. And now we just see complaints that people can't get enough of them. Humans are amazing.
Renee, I don't think I'm going beyond what my powers are by speaking for a great number of listeners saying that if Apple decided to do it, to make anything because Kim Kardashian wanted one, this is when we start switching to, like, you know, Radio Shack brand phones and Radio Shack brand. I don't want to buy anything from a company that made something that Kim Kardashian wanted.
It was codenamed Kardashian. Sorry. But they didn't make it I mean, it could have been worse. They could have made it garage HTC gold. I mean, they didn't do that. So they took tasteful champagne gold.
Are either one of you going to get the red iPhone 7? Do you both, Alex and Andy, you both have the iPhone 7?
We do.
I have one. I don't use it, though.
Yeah. Do you use an Android phone?
Yeah, my daily carry is Android. I have an iPhone 7 for my hardware library that I use probably once or twice a day for other things. But yeah, I have an iPhone 7.
Anyone else just picture Andy like on a library with a ladder that he has to pull the ladder across, go up and start selecting phones off the shelves?
Actually,
the hardware library, that would be amazing.
I was picturing that heads-up display that was like Android phone, Android phone, Android phone.
Oh yeah, like the Matrix where all the phones just fly past him.
Or I can just simply lean over to a shelf here, which is just some stuff that I've got. That's not, you never know when you need. You never know when you're going to have to, like, you know what. But how does this compare to the keyboard on a Radio Shack Model 100?
You never know when you're hungry and you need a tablet sandwich. Is what I think he just said. Tablet Dagwood's sandwich.
You know the old cliche about like the nerd with a pocket protector that has 100 pens, even though he doesn't need them. This is my pocket protector with 100 pens in it. a shelf with like every single device I have ever bought through the sands of time.
I have to admit that I'm just reminded of my iPhone 7 every time I can't find my headphone jack. Mm-hmm. You know, like I just I think I have 5 of the adapters. You know, these little adapters, I have like 5 of them there in different jackets and pockets and things just to make sure that I don't. And I still end up in a situation
but where they're
I'm
not like, red.
I can't believe I bought this phone. I'm sorry. I just, every time I can't find it, I'm just like, I cannot believe. I can't charge my phone because I need to talk on it and I don't have like a little doubler or whatever. And I'm just like, really?
For me, it's airplanes because the airplane still wants a jack, but my phone doesn't have it. So I can't use AirPods on the airplane thing and I can't use 3.5 on my iPhone and the world's not compatible. And it's terrible.
Yeah, it's really hard. Life is really hard for us.
The worst. It's the worst.
I know. Exactly. It's a first world problem.
All right. WWDC. Anything, any news there? Are you guys excited about that? Anything that we can talk about on that front?
Registration's open. Go, go, go.
Yeah. Sign up for your chance.
The lottery.
So is it
this is the only lottery where you actually pay if you win.
Yes. Oh my God, how did they figure that out?
Time to go. The lottery where you go to carousel. Your app is too old. Your app is 30 quarters old.
Does Google I/O do a lottery as well? I forgot. How do they choose their?
I think they do a lottery as well, especially now that they've got a more constrained thing, a place for them.
Yeah, it's just hard. So many developers, so little space.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, at least they stream it all.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, and the streaming, like, it used to be like you would get WWDC maybe 6 months after everyone else if you didn't go there. And now, like, they're streaming, they started off very slow and just streaming a few of the sessions from Presidio. And now I think last year they streamed all the sessions and the videos were, I think every video was available later that day. And there were just people in hotels having streaming parties, watching the whole thing. It was an amazing experience. It's like night and day compared to where they were just a couple of years ago.
In a minute, I want to talk about charging. I want to talk about the exciting world of charging. I saw a patent that will let your iPhone and your iPad charge your laptop. But first, I want to take a second to thank our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. If you've ever gotten a mortgage, you know it's frustrating. It's time consuming. You're running all over the place. Basically, you have to get dressed in real clothes, get off the couch, and head out into the real world. But you don't have to do that anymore. You can now do it from your couch with Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. It's totally online. You can work with someone who you trust, and you don't have to get up off the couch. What's better than that? When it comes to this big decision, it's a huge decision. Houses are expensive, whether you're buying one or refinancing. It's important to work with someone who you trust and someone who has your best interest in mind. Rocket Mortgage has a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. You can adjust the rate and the length of your loan in real time. That way you can make sure you'll get the mortgage solution that is right for you. So you can mess with all those levers online, sitting on your couch, eating popcorn or whatever, and then get the loan that's right for you, that you feel comfortable with, that you can trust. So whether you're looking to buy a home or refinancing the existing mortgage that you already have, you can lift that burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. We're all geeks. We like to do things online. Get your mortgage loan online. Why not? You can skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. That's quickenloans.com/MacBreak. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. So companies get patents, lots of patents. There's one that we spotted that was charging your computer with your iPhone or iPad. What do you guys think of this?
I think it's a good idea. On the other side of the fence, we already have a USB-C allowed to charge. When you plug in a device, when you plug in a USB-C device, like on Android and other operating systems, it doesn't, just like you get the, sometimes you get the pop-up that says, do you want this to be like a photo device? Do you want this to be mass storage? Do you want to just charge it? And now one of the options with USB-C is, do you want this to act as a battery charger for the device you're connecting it to? Which is awesome, because it's like having just, you've got water in two or three bottles. Maybe you want it to pour it from one place to another. And given that my iPad Pro is just like a huge battery with a screen incidentally attached to it. Oh boy, would I love to like drain off 20% of that battery and put it into my phone when I'm nearly dead.
I read it as a little bit more ambitious than that. Like, it seems to me like it wasn't just an electrical system, but it was almost like the old Palm Folio, where they were making what amounts to a thin Mac client that you could slide an iOS device into, and it sort of became a Mac, that it would use the logic, the power of the chipsets, everything from the handheld device and just give you a big comfy keyboard and or a big display if you're using an iPhone to sort of do all your work in. I know a lot of companies have done this. Like, there have been Motorola and all sorts of versions of those. But and Windows
didn't
is going to
NVIDIA have something like that? They had like a little like thing that you could do that was separate that you brought back together.
I think yeah, and the whole Continuum thing is doing all that. But I don't know if Apple would do it better. They've always seemed a little bit, you know, not great in my experience so far. Yeah. And Apple might never bring this to market, but of course they're going to patent it if they're even beginning to look at it. But I just like the idea because my iPhone is my everything. And if I don't have to have multiple everythings, if I have one store of truth, one store of identity, one store of information, and then just a handier way to type and browse on it, I mean, that would be great for me.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a really good like iPad dock. Like the drawings we're seeing right there. The thing that made that it's more interesting to me than the idea of having my phone be expanded into something with a keyboard and a screen is the idea of repurposing this really good, super high definition, beautiful color accurate display, super cool multi-touch sensor array on top of it. And basically, what if you were able to use that as the trackpad of your laptop? So not only do you have all this multi-touch things going on, but you would also have the advantages of, let's say, the touch bar on the 2016 MacBooks, where it's not just going to give you a surface to touch on. It will also be able to give you buttons that are context aware or a place for Siri to live, for instance. It's a great idea. The more time I spent with the Touch Bar, the more I wish that you could essentially dock an iPad or an iOS device to the Mac and just use it as an input device that way. So as we've all seen, that Apple patents pretty much everything. So you see a lot of interesting ideas that were worth the money to just file a patent for it. I don't know if anything's going to come of it. I'm sure that there are 3 or 4 or 5 different attempts to make a dockable phone that we haven't even mentioned, because it's one of these ideas that comes up just every 2 or 3 years. Somebody proposes to do this. The Samsung Galaxy S8 is coming out tomorrow. One of the rumors is that it's going to have a desktop dock, so that and when you dock it, you basically get this HDMI, like HD desktop sort of display, desktop version of Android. People keep trying it. Microsoft tried it with Windows 10. They just can't get anybody to be interested in actually using a phone that way. So maybe it might be one of those things that like it's like all those old-timey movies of people who've built these flappy wings jumping off of like cliffs and trying to fly, because it just makes sense that this would work. I know what that last person did wrong. They made it out of bamboo. They should have made it out of Alden wood, and that's the reason why they failed. And so cut to new film of someone flapping and then falling right onto the sand. So it'll be fun to watch if they actually build it.
So, Renee, I know that you had some hands-on time with a very important app, the Clips app, which appears to be very similar to what's already out there in terms of video, aside from the ability to automatically caption. What did you think about it?
So I totally underestimated this app. I thought this was going to be like a dad joke. Like, Apple looked at Snapchat and said, oh, we can, you know, a 30 or 40-year-old company trying to be young and hip, and we can do something socially and networking, and all the kids are Instagramming and snapping, and we can get involved in that, and it would thud like ping for me. That was my expectation going in. And I was actually really surprised. It's not like the iMessage team. I would have thought that Apple would say, this is iOS 11 iMessage, and we've added all these special features, and they're exclusive to iMessage. Your Blue Bubble friends get to enjoy them all. But they've made a standalone app, and once they started talking about it, I really got it. It's done by the video team. It's not done by any social team. It's not done by any messaging team. It's almost like when Randy Ubelos announced iMovie several years ago. He said, I was on vacation, and I just wanted to share my vacation footage, and I couldn't do it quickly and easily, so I made this all-new iMovie. And this is the same thing. It's like now that generation of people, they're not on vacation trying to share some videotape footage that they took. They're on social and they're taking things with their iPhones and iPads, and they just want to quickly share a funny clip, or they want to have the next, you know, viral video. And it's kind of laborious because you have memories, and according to Apple, memories is super popular with a lot of people because the only feature those people want is automatic any play button. And this just takes your photos and gives you little collage videos out of them, and they love that. But when they want to start tweaking them, the next step is iMovie. And that's just too big a step for them. So the video team made something that's like in between Memories and iMovie. And it's got this idea where all you do is you make clips. You hold down the button and it's got really good affordance. It actually says hold down this button to record. You don't have to sort of discover it the way you discover a Snapchat UI. You hold down that button and you record a clip. If you want to, you can dictate like you learned to enunciate at Juilliard. And it'll start putting titles down for you. And you can choose a variety of different titling styles from like quick smash impact to floaty to careening, really cute. Or you can just take some video and you can put a really nice, really beautifully animated emoji on them, or like bang, poof, pow, Batman style effects on them, or captions. Like I can say, this is Andy, and it'll animate in, it'll ease in, it'll ease out. It'll look really, really cool. And then you take another clip, and you can do selfies, and you can do LCs, and you can do couplies, and all sorts of things. And you can even take photos, and you hold down to add the photo. So if you want the photo up for a second, you hold and let go. If you want it on for 5 seconds, you hold it down. And you can like pinch and zoom while you're adding it, and it'll duplicate the movement you make. So you can do like fake boomerang zoom by going in and out while you're doing things. And then it'll – if. Sorry, I'm going on about this, but it's really, really clever. And then you can move the little clips around. You just grab one, drag it, drop it to a new place. So if you put in where you are, and no, that'd be better at the beginning. You just move it around, and then it'll identify it. So if I have a picture of Andy and I say, I wish Alex were here, it would immediately say, do you want to share this with Alex and Andy? Because Andy is in your facial recognition photography library, and you mentioned Alex, and he's in your contacts, so we'll let you share with them, or you can save it out. And for apps that have a Write API, you can actually send it straight to them, and then you can use this sort of the front end. And I know, like on iMore, we've been struggling with tools to make really cute Instagram and Facebook videos, and those videos are silent by default, and you want the titles in there. It's just become something you have to do because people just don't want loud music blaring out at them immediately. And this might be a really good way for us to do that, but I think it'll be just a lot of fun. And there's live filters like comic book, and I could go on about this for minutes, but it was way more and way better than I expected it to be. And I think a lot of credit goes to the video team at Apple for that.
Yeah, it's really easy for me to be cynical about an app like this, but I'm glad that Apple is still the sort of company that says, well, this is not something that will make us money. It probably won't even help us sell phones, but it's a cool idea. This team wants to do it. Let's let them do it. And then saying, wow, that really is cool. I'm using it all the time. Let's put our logo on this and make it official software.
It's like music memos, but for people who are doing video stuff instead of doing quick. It's like doing quick video sketches instead of quick music sketches.
Well, I was going to bring up music memos because there was a big splash about that. But then, you know, we don't hear about it that often. And I thought, and I am not a musician, but I thought it would be something that people would use, you know, on a regular everyday basis.
I said that. And then like one of the people on our team said, I use it every day. I'm in a band. We use it continuously. And then people were like, musicians are using it all the time. Taylor Swift is all over that. So apparently it's just us non-music people that don't hear about it. And there's this whole discussion going on outside of us.
I haven't actually downloaded it yet, but from what I've seen of it, it really does look like the sort of – I love tools that sort of inspire you to do things that are out of your wheelhouse only because it's – difficult to do it in Final Cut. It's even difficult to do it in iMovie. But this is something that while you're waiting for the shuttle to take you from your hotel back to the airport, you can screw around. And you just did it to kill some time. But by the time you're actually at the terminal, oh my God, I've actually made a really cool minute and a half clip that I didn't have anything to share about my vacation to my friends. Now I do. That seems like that's the sort of app this is.
And we should say it's not available yet. It's not available till April. Renee got a hands-on in his secret.
But your Insta is going to be lit, Megan. Your Insta is going to be lit, as the kids say.
I'm very excited about that. Speaking of the kids, emoji. There are lots more new emoji. And Tanya here is very excited about the milkshake emoji. She demanded it. I guess it's a cup with a straw. But there are 69 new emoji coming with Unicode this summer. There's some meditating, a porcupine, a brain.
Topless spooning. That's very awkward.
Yeah. The spoon. Is that a person with a spoon? I don't know. What
ice cream scoop? Because I don't know.
They don't look like they have clothes on. I mean, I'm just
saying. Ask a real question. Is like, how hard is it to hold down French fries and get poutine, tater tots, and I don't know, hash browns? Like, how hard would that be for Unicode or Apple to implement?
Renee,
2017,
it's an open,
and we don't
it's
have
an open
tots.
Standard. You can write a proposal for inclusion, but apparently you like just to mouth off and talk a big game. You just don't want to affect social change and put some skin in the game.
Potato skins.
Yep, you can have nothing to say about that. I have hit the, look at the nail. I've just hit it right on the head there.
You've been working on that for a while, right?
Renee, we're waiting. So next Mac break, we're expecting to see some quality artwork.
I'll poutine the hell out of emoji. It just, there'll be poutine there everywhere.
I don't think it's hard. Well, it's not hard to make a poutine emoji, but poutine is disgusting, and that's why they haven't done it.
What?
No.
Nothing with cheese as an ingredient can possibly be disgusting.
I will defend
any cheese-based snack.
You wound me, ma'am.
Renee's furiously typing to Leo, do not let Megan host Mac Break again.
She is an anti-poutineite. I feel like I'm stuck in Seinfeld right now.
Starting to feel like a regime change. I'm not comfortable with change.
You're not comfortable. Okay. It's only kale
animal
emoji.
Fries, fine. Poutine out. Is there a kale emoji? I didn't look.
We don't need to argue that what really happens is that there'll be the new emoji and then the world will come together and decide what sex thing this will actually start to represent in our conversations.
Yes. Thank you. That was what I was wondering about the person with the spoon. I'm not sure what's going on there. Maybe we should.
There you go. See, exactly. Is it?
Why you a get, spoon?
You're at a meeting and you suddenly get a text from your boyfriend, your girlfriend with that, and suddenly say, okay, this meeting is adjourned. I'm going home.
It's like a steam room, right? It's like they're not just steam. They're not just naked with spoons. It's steaming.
Come on, my goodness. Let's get a big bowl of pudding and eat it naked.
Okay.
And is there a second horns emoji? Was the first horns emoji not good enough?
Someone throwing the horns.
The goat. Throw the goat.
Or is that the I love you sign? The other one was the horns. This is the I love you sign, I guess.
This is peace. This is throwing the goat. This is when there's too much rock and roll for just one hand.
Okay. Well, if you have such strong feelings, you should talk to my friend Jeremy, who's on the the board of the Emojipedia and meets every week. And
I complained to Jeremy.
Oh, you already spoke to Jeremy? Okay.
He gave me a strong silence in response.
I have to imagine that's about 17/18 of your job on that board, so just to say no.
No. That's a horrible
yes.
idea.
Sweet potato, no.
Well, I think that was one of the things that I really loved about Telegram was all of the photos that you could, I have like thousands of photos in my Telegram account that I don't really use much because I couldn't get anyone else to use it. But it was great to have these great big photos that you could throw in there. I guess it was a little annoying because they were big, but it was a good time. I think I've gotten very addicted to emojis and GIFs.
Well, Baba in the chat room says that's not a spoon, it's a shower.
A
shower.
Okay.
Oh, what? That's not, I don't have that. The sauna.
It doesn't look like a shower.
That's a sauna? The scoop? The sauna? Okay, Carson says it's the scoop.
Oh, it's
the
sauna. It's like the little that you put it on the rocks.
Okay. But if you have a metal one of those, I think you would burn your hand. I'm saying that that's a bad interface design, I think.
Yeah.
I would much rather say eating pudding in a hot tub naked. Mm-hmm. Because you're so excited about pudding that you're probably going to get it all over yourself anyway. So you may as well take off your shirt.
I'm sold on eating pudding. I like that.
It's the Netflix and chill of 2018.
we have a title.
Priorities.
Yeah, eating pudding in a hot tub is really going to be a great title. Leo's going to be sorry he went on
candy
vacation.
Candy cane socks with green heels. Is that the other one? I need you to explain these to me. I feel like
Megan, you've got the nail on the head. Leo's going to be back from vacation tomorrow because he's going to say, "Oh my God, it's running way too well without me. I need to come back before they Before there's no job for me to come back to."
Right.
Great things happen when Megan hosts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I have strong feelings about emoji. I also have strong feelings about IKEA. And they just announced a new set of Internet of Homes devices. I'm not sure if they work with HomeKit. I think they work with Zigbee. I don't know if you guys have checked this out. It was an article in The Verge yesterday. I just moved into a new house. So I am seriously thinking about all the home automation that I can do. Are you guys IKEA fans? And do you think
I just think that I have a lot of IKEA furniture, and what I'm expecting from this, my expectation related to these, is that I'm going to have instructions that are in black and white and not printed very well, and when I'm finished with it, I'm going to have a couple pieces still left over. And Not sure exactly why that light doesn't really actually like, turn on.
They overpack the pieces.
That'll be more like you go to the IKEA store for a new LED bulb. You come back with the LED bulb and three armoires.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's like, what are the two most confusing things to me right now? Putting together internet-connected home and putting together IKEA furniture. And so let's mix them together. And yeah, internet-connected IKEA.
Oh, wait till you see the IKEA Lego set. It's magnificent.
Well, Scooter X in the chat room says that they're not for the U.S. So maybe they're for Canada. I don't know. That's what he says.
Probably
select
not.
European countries.
Yes. We don't get what you don't get. And we don't get what you get either. I mean, yeah. We're very consistent.
Ooh, I don't know. That's possibly a chilling thought. That if they're saying that we're selling an electrical device, we think it's safe, but just in case, we're not selling it to any country that does not have nationalized health care.
Ouch.
There you go. We think it's going to be okay. It's going to be fine.
When it's been tested on Canadians, then we'll let it be sold.
Stephen Penny is saying it's a sauna emoji. It comes from a Finland tourist board campaign a little while ago. But I think that's not world readable. I think it's a little bit opaque outside of that one Finland tourist campaign is what I'm going to say.
Mm. All right. Should we dare to talk about politics? Is that something that the only political story that I have seen is the Office of American Innovation, which seems like a great idea to me. It was announced yesterday, run by Jared Kushner. And Tim Cook is going to be an advisor in the Office of America.
How happy he looks.
He does.
So happy.
He's like sticking it. He's leaning in. Sheryl Sandberg would be happy. He's leaning in on that table.
He's leaning in some direction.
And look, he looks a little bit like he's Photoshopped there, doesn't he? Like, he looks a little smaller than everyone
like
else.
Try not to get too much.
You could probably cut that photo out and use it in a lot of places, I guess is what I would say.
So what do we think?
And then Tim was looking here. I think it makes sense. I think it makes sense for Apple to be part of it. I mean, I think that you want to be part of those conversations, whether you necessarily agree with what they're doing or how they're doing it. I think being heard, I think, is important. So I think he's on it. I think Elon Musk as well. And there's one other
Bill Gates.
CEO that they listed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bill Gates.
Bill Gates. Yeah. So I think
I'm
being able to try to have some kind of input makes sense.
I'm just jaded. Like, it always feels like with government, they create a committee to study the plausibility of creating a committee to discuss the philosophy of making a potential recommendation to somebody. And then like they spend lots of money and take up lots of time. And we at the end result of this see nothing. Hopefully this is not that.
Yeah. I'm optimistic for a couple of reasons. Number one, it does not have the word freedom or liberty in the title. So that's a good indication. But also I'll be a little optimistic. I'll stick my neck out. Because this comes on the heels of the announcement that a fellow by the name of Matt Lira has become an official like tech advisor to the White House, who's a really interesting guy. He's definitely a Republican. He's worked as tech advisor for the Republican majority leaders twice, I think, the last two of them. But he was noted throughout the Obama administration for someone who really is just interested in moving tech forward and basically creating open government based on technology and basically bringing different groups together. It doesn't matter who came up with this idea. It doesn't matter who's going to sign this. This is a good idea. Let's make this happen. So, for instance, not afraid to, even after the election, to talk about what a great tech president Obama was and praise a lot of his policies. For instance, he was one of the people who was trying to lock down a program that was started kind of informally. It was sort of like a Peace Corps for tech people, where a tech executive can take a sabbatical to essentially work in government to lend some help on a project. Like when healthcare.gov became a huge problem, they said, okay, let's basically get a tiger team in here to just rebuild the website and make sure everything works properly. Part of it was contractors, but part of it was just, look, we got experts who are not going to leave these amazing careers and amazing salaries to work for the government to fix the healthcare site, but they're willing to take two or three months off to build something that taxpayers and citizens will benefit from. And so they decided to sort of make this into an official program. It was the last piece of legislation that Obama signed to basically make this into an officially recognized project. And he was one of the people that was sort of and there's a Wired article and a couple other places that talked about how it was literally his Obama's authority to sign legislation was going to end within the hour. But they found the room that he was waiting in during the inauguration. They got the it was passed by the House, passed by the Senate. All they had to do was find out where Obama was and get this piece of paper to him so he could sign it. And he was one of the people that was like at backyard cookouts at trampoline parks trying to call, where is he? Maybe call this guy. Call this guy. So anyway, if this is the sort of thinking that comes from an extension of what was happening under the Obama plan, which is let's have better communication between tech people and the government, I'm all for it. I certainly don't think that the people that have been lined up for this task force are the sort of people that can be exploited by the White House to say, yes, well, yes, we're taking away people's rights. And basically we're saying that we're going to outlaw encryption and we're going to make it outlaw for you to copy an MP3 anywhere. But look, here's a picture of me with Tim Cook. So obviously I know all about the computer stuff. I'm really involved in things that are, you know, high tech. I don't think that's that sort of thing. So I can be optimistic about it.
I'm optimistic, too. I think I would love to see a presidential race between Bill Gates and Tim Cook. It'd be fascinating. I know it'll never happen.
it'll be the first election with 130% turnout. Yeah. With 5.8 billion votes, Bill Gates with 17.8 trillion votes.
This is Tim. I don't like to talk about future policies, so I just think you'll be surprised and delighted if you vote for me.
Oh my God. I just got a chill because if there's one phrase I associate with both Trump and Tim Cook, it's like, you know, it's like, don't worry, we've got great things in store for the Mac. Incredible things, awesome things. You're going to be incredibly excited. The best Macs ever. Like, okay, but when are we going to see it? The best. We've got the best people working on the greatest Macs. Like, oh no, he's talking. Maybe it's rubbing off. I don't know whether it's rubbing off one way or another, but. Healthcare and Macs, two things we're being promised that we're going to get, but I have to wonder if I should just find a place, a nice cardboard box to curl up in, so that I'll die someplace safe.
Drive north, yeah. Andy. Just drive north. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'll get your new Mac when you get your wall. Perhaps.
We won't be able to get across the border.
Yeah, maybe the wall will be made of the Macs that you
just to spite me. Just to spite Mac people.
All the unreleased Macs.
We built 18.1 billion wonderful. We actually revived the cheese grater Mac, and you know what? And we took all of them, and they got the latest Intel processors, and now we're just using them as building blocks to make a wall out of, because that's how much we like you.
Our MacBook.
It is personal.
That's the gate.
And Stoic Squirrel in the chat room asks if Mexico is going to pay for his Mac, and yes, it is. So. I guess we next up is some picks. So I have a pick. I am hoping that you guys have some good picks because I need some recommendations. But first, I want to take a second, a minute maybe even, to thank our sponsor, Betterment. You want to invest in your future and your family's future. And like many of the things we talk about on the show, you want to do it online. You feel comfortable at home, as I've said before, in your pajamas, sitting on the couch. And you can do that even with your investing. You can invest online, and using Betterment is a way to do that. It's great technology. This is really interesting. Betterment is the largest independent automated investing service, and it's totally changed the industry by making investing easier. And you pay a fraction of what you would pay for traditional financial services. So Betterment, what they do is they combine all the smart technology with human advisors to achieve optimal results at every level of investment. So you do get to talk to a human as well, and you get to combine that with the technology. Customers can gain access to a team of CFP professionals and licensed financial experts who will monitor accounts, and they're able to answer questions. So, you know, occasionally you're going to have questions. I do, and I'm investing. A lot of it doesn't make sense to me, and I have some questions. Customers also receive planning calls and notifications throughout the year. Betterment's goal-based investing framework and advice algorithm will let you know if you are on track, and it just takes seconds. Betterment's tax loss harvesting will help lower investment taxes and then increase after-tax returns. There's also a retire guide that provides a consolidated view of your retirement and calculates your retirement gap. Smart deposits allow you to automatically invest all your excess cash. That sounds good. Excess cash. There are no trade, transaction, or rebalancing fees, and no minimum to sign up. So the fees is where that's where they get you. And if you ever go looking through your statements, your investment statements, and there's so many fees and they don't make any sense, through global diversification, smart rebalancing, and lower fees, Betterment customers can expect higher returns than your typical DIY investor. So we know you have a lot of choices in do-it-yourself investing. But these are higher returns here. There's end-to-end investing. That means faster cash transfers, tax forms available at the earliest possible date, and secure investing. We know that security is really important to you. And of all of our advertisers, we really investigate their security aspects. That's a big deal for us. It's important to Leo. It's important to the rest of us. We understand it's important to you, and Betterment has secure investing. As with everything in life, investing involves risk. Right now, get 1 month managed free when you make an initial deposit of $10,000 or more. So to learn more, visit Betterment.com/MacBreak. That's BETTERMENT.com/MacBreak. Don't forget to add the MacBreak. We want them to know that we sent you there. That's Betterment.com/MacBreak. Betterment, investing made better. So it's time for picks. Who's usually starts? Does Leo start the picks? Who gets to start?
It's a free for all.
He just starts with one of us.
Okay. I want to start with you, Alex.
Okay, fine. Be that way. throw me into the bus. Both my kids now, I'm getting to that part of parenting where both my kids are in Little League, my son and my daughter in Little League. And it's very complicated to keep track of, like, who's going where and where's the practices and what games and what field and all those other things. And it used to be quite a thing. I mean, when I was a kid and we had a bunch of brothers and sisters who were all playing and I hadn't seen it before until last week, but my kids, I downloaded this app called Sports Engine, which my league uses. And I just think it was just a great example of how to use an app to solve this. They have a website and they manage it all. And so you log in, you can log in on the website if you're a parent and figure out what's actually going on. But the problem is, like, when it starts raining, which it has been over the last couple of weeks, all these practices and games are all changing all the time, and trying to, like, do a phone tree or an email or whatever, has always been the kind of, you end up showing up at the field and there's nobody there and you can't figure out why. And so I just thought it was such a great idea. Like, whoever came up with this, like, when I'm not usually impressed by apps very much. The UI on the iOS app is great. Whether it's an iOS app or some kind of weird web app, I'm not sure, but it works really well. And it's just, if you're someone who's organizing one of these, I have to say that I would suggest it to do something like this, because I can't imagine, I remember what it used to be like, and it was mass chaos. This seems to be a pretty straightforward. I get the impression, I mean, things are changing all the time, so I get the impression that whoever's admitting your team can just simply say, oh, we moved the practice to this time, and then all I have to do is look at this. And I know it seems like it's a very parenty pick. This time I don't usually pick parenty picks, but this was one, as someone who's trying to do the best I can to show up to as many practices and games as I can, it's makes my job a lot easier. So anyway, that's it. It's called Sports Engine. It's just for people. I don't know if it's for anything other than Little Leagues, but as far as I'm concerned, it works great.
Well, they have basketball players on there, so I'm guessing.
Yeah, so I imagine it's just any sport. I imagine if it's any game sport. I was looking at the app when I was recommending it, and I just know how it looks for me. But if there's any game sport that your league is doing, you're trying to figure one out. I haven't seen any other ones, but I can say that this is it works really smoothly.
So, I use Team Snap, that's what my daughter's soccer team uses. Have you ever tried that?
They use Team Snap.
Team Snap.
I have not tried Team Snap. Well, I don't have anyone in team. I think you have to be in something to understand whether it's good or not.
Yeah.
You have to be, like, actually experiencing it. So,
right. Like the real world. Yeah. The tense real world situations of being a soccer mom or dad. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's great. And it has, like, an Apple Watch app. So if I'm here if I'm at work during a soccer game, I get notified if there's a goal. I really like it.
Okay. Yours is way past mine. I mean,
yeah,
I was
tell you, yeah,
that
sorry.
I
had, yeah, it's a great. It's, and I've talked to one of the developers before, and she was amazing. Really great feedback. And so, yeah, I'm sure sports.
I think I just said, "Wow, this food is great," and you're like, you know, you don't have to always eat oatmeal. There is
it's true.
Like steak
you don't have
here,
to. Yeah, so you can get my AirPods plays. You know, recordings from the game. I'm just kidding.
We have been threatening. You know, we're waiting to see if we have enough dead time. You know, we have a production trailer. You know, 24-foot production trailer. It's all 4K and. There's talk internally that we should stream one of our games. So we'll let you guys know if
okay.
we actually
excellent.
Pull the trigger on, stream, you know, pulling out the big lenses.
All right, Andy, you're up next.
Boy, am I having a lot of fun with this pick. This is Autodesk Fusion 360, which is one of the, not just a really great design app, but it's really one of the best designed apps I've ever seen. The 3D design apps are really, really complicated because they're usually based upon some piece of software that costs $10,000 and you need to go through a $10,000 training course in order to learn how to use it. This is how you design a nuclear reactor with these things. And so they're really not designed to be easy, but they've really managed to get make a generalized app for any sort of physical object that you want to have or have made or just have come out of your head. It's so easy to just conceive it, draw it out, have a perfectly done, perfectly investigated 3D model of it, and then either it ends there because all you wanted to do was just have some fun to see how hard would it be to make a model of my mom's car in this app. But then you could then take the next step and say, well, here's through a drop-down menu, send this design to manufacturing facilities and it will be 3D printed. Or if it's like a wood project, they will laser cut the parts for you and ship them back to you. Or if you need to have like 1,000 of them manufactured, it will be you can have it manufactured. Or it'll print out a set of plans and blueprints. There seems to be no end to what you can make with this. I was just messing around with it while I was sick in bed last week. And it's after just messing around for 10 minutes, I suddenly remember that, I've always wanted to make a little shelving unit to put on top of the table next to me. So I'll have like a rack for all my equipment on it. And then I had the thing done in like less than an hour. And then over the next couple of days, I kept tweaking it and fine tuning it. And this is not me learning, knowing how to use it the way that an engineer would know how to use it, but just messing around with it. And I now know exactly how it made me inspired to, why don't I try a more complex sort of joinery to make these upright so I can make it simpler? What if I were to adjust the height like that? It made it very easy for me to make models of, I need a place for the laptop. I need a place for the Mac Mini. I need a place for the NAS. It made it very easy to make simple models of all those things so I could fit them onto the shelves to see how big the shelves could be. And then the last thing, you're seeing it right now, is I'm probably going to build it when I get back home from New York. And so now here is a set of plans that shows me, here's what it looks like from every elevation. Here's all the measurements I need to go for. Like I said, I'm tempted to not take my MacBook instead of the iPad, because I'm going to be on a train for 3 or 4 hours, because now I want to play with it a little bit more. I built this model using... It doesn't force you to build it the right way. It lets you just basically play with shapes and how they fit together. But if you are smart, since I built that, I've been online. They have an immense Autodesk has an immense amount of tutorials on how to use the stuff. I could do things instead of actually putting a piece of wood into that area and then duplicating it and then then just pushing and pulling it around. I could say that. Instead of this vertical piece of wood is 12 inches, I could say that I could define that as this is the height of the thing I want to make. And then somewhere on another window, there's like a little variable that says, what is the height of this bookshelf? Okay, the height is 12 inches. So that later on, if I built this correctly, if I decide that actually, I really want to put a second shelf in there so I can have a VCR or some other piece of video equipment, I could just simply say, change that number from 12 inches to 18 inches. And now the entire thing has changed because the length of that piece of wood was not fixed at 12 inches. It was defined at whatever this variable height is. And so you can basically make really huge changes by changing numbers. What I'm saying is that it's really fun to play with, even if you have no intention to build a spaceship or a piece of shelving or anything like that. Sometimes you're sort of turned off by I don't want to get into sculpting because, oh, I have to get clay and I have to get armature wire. I don't want to really get into like Lego or prop modeling because I can't learn how to – I can't buy a laser cutter. I can't learn how to work with molds and stuff like that. But if you download this app, which is free for single-person use, if you're just someone messing around with it or just a hobbyist, it's absolutely free. If you're using it with your company, then it's a – it's on like a monthly license sort of thing. But it's free to download and use the full version of it. You can just sort of just mess around with it, and then you'll be surprised that 2 weeks later you have the perfect version of the Millennium Falcon that you've always just wanted to build. And it's a 3D model. You can have it 3D printed, or you can just have it rendered beautifully and perfectly. It has a built-in renderer that's just absolutely beautiful. And so now you can, if you want the Millennium Falcon in the background of all of your cousin's wedding pictures, you can make a model or download a model of the Millennium Falcon, put it there. The last thing I'll shut up now because I get this is something I'm getting pretty excited about. Recently, I found out that it also has a built-in link to a tool catalog. It has a built-in link to the whole McMaster car hardware catalog, which is like the biggest hardware store in the world because it's a distributor. So I'm going to be holding some of the stuff, some of these pieces of this bookshelf together with screws. So now I can just basically go through the entire catalog, say, oh, there's a brass Phillips flathead screw, maybe an inch and a half. And so you tap on that, it will automatically put into your model a 3D model of that exact part. So now I can basically place all the screws where they need to go. I say, oh, no, if it's only an inch and a half, it won't bite into the other piece of wood, but it needs to be 2 inches. Replace that with a 2-inch version of it. So now when I'm done, I know that I don't need to buy a whole package of 20 screws. I only need 8 of them. I know I need the 2-inch one of them. I could click a button, just have them shipped to me. It's like, oh, my God, it's like wishing for something to exist, and now it exists, or at least the plans for it exists. So download it and play with it. It's just so much fun to play with.
I want you to send it off to a manufacturer and make me one.
Okay. Might be kind of beefy.
I've been thinking. I mean, I've been looking for a tech shelf. Like, it's really complicated. You know, we have 4 iPads, 5 iPhones, 3 laptops. 4 different. The AirPods and everything to charge. And I've been looking for like the perfect table. That's now I should just build my own.
And that's the fun of this. It's like, it's so easy. This basic thing is something simple. I build stuff like this really, really easily because it's easy to make, bonehead sort of just screw it together, glue it together sort of joints, just cut them to length. But when you start to see how parts fit together, you start to get more ambitious. And now I'm thinking that, well, there's the shelves. I'm using like this wood stock that I happen to have a lot of in the house. So that makes like sort of a thick shelf. What if I were to make those like hidden storage for like the cable runs so that all the cables are sort of hidden inside these shelves? And what if I were to make another sort of thing that can fit next to it as a sort of an easel for the iPad that I could also lift off and put onto the desk? And you just get more and more ambitious as you go because it's easy to mess around with this sort of stuff. You tend to believe that all things are possible with this.
I know. I mean,
I might make a couple. And if you like version number 2 or version number 1, we'll talk. And
okay. Well, I think
for postage and handling.
I've seen where you keep your dongles. I don't mean to be forward, but your cabinet, you're with all your little drawers. And I think maybe you could come up with something that works even better than that. And then maybe you'd have another career manufacturing these and selling them.
I'll have another career and 1.5 fewer fingers.
Oh, no. Didn't you say you just send it off to someone else to manufacture it?
You can, but it's fun. It's
right.
It's fun to not just the pride of doing it, but when you cut like hand cut joints like that, it's fun to just take wood, turn it into sawdust. And then, oh, my God, these things actually fit together like it's IKEA furniture that's built to be assembled. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, that's nice. And it's fun.
Yeah, but when the orders start rolling in, 100, 300 a day, you might have to.
Well, that's when we outsource it to Chinese factories, hopefully one that doesn't pay its labor force as well as Apple does.
Right.
God, the money they throw away on safety and health and well-being. We can margin up. We can margin way the hell up.
All right, Renee, what do you got?
All right, so Apple also put out, in addition to red iPhones and new iPads, they put out some new Apple Watch bands. So these are the Nike ones. This one is a holdover from the original Nike Plus Apple Watch. So you can get the black and Volt color now, which is like an acid, bright acid neon green. You can also get You can also get just this white one that has, it's a little off-white with white inserts, mm-hmm. and you can get what they call anthracite, which is kind of a dark charcoaly gray with black inside, and they're all really nice. But, you know, those are I don't want to call them conservative, they're kind of sporty, but if you really want to get into it, there's all new striped nylon bands. So here's a couple of them on watches. But there's all sorts of new colors that you can get for these two. I'll hold this a little lower down.
Did you buy them in a six-pack?
No, so I got a couple of these as review units, and I bought a couple of them, and actually some of them will be repurposed as gifts because most of the people in my family have Apple Watch at this point, and they always like the new collections. Mm-hmm. So let me just bring these over. There we go. So, I mean, I've seen people sort of match them to their shirts. I've also seen them just wear them, like, because they're fun and bright and shiny. And I'm told by people way smarter than me that these are the hot new looks. And if you look through fashion magazines, you'll see a lot of these sorts of colors coming in the new spring collections. I just see, oh, bright, shiny, and new. So I don't really, you know, I'm not all Vogue about it. But I do think that some of them are really nice. The blues are really nice. Some of them are a little bit candy cane. But, you know, some people really like to make giant splashes of color with an otherwise very utilitarian design. So there's also some new leathers, and the new leathers match the new leather Apple cases, and there's new vinyls as well. So it's, if you want to spruce up your Apple Watch look, the nylon started, I think, $50, and I think the sport bands are roughly the same price, and the leathers go up to about $150. But for birthday, special occasions, whatever. There's some new Hermes as well, of course. Apple's never found a better way of removing me from my money than they have with Apple Watch bands. But, yeah, a lot of really great new stuff for the spring.
Well, yeah, I had not seen the Hermes in the wilds until I saw Georgia in the wild.
Yes.
And it's nice. It looks nothing like my knockoff. And so, yeah, I was very jealous. I like all the new leather colors.
Yeah, there's a lime as well. And there's like sort of like doing a berry red this year. And again, like they use the French words for the different colors, but not for the buckles. So, yeah, it's a little bit impenetrable, but... they're all very nice looking.
And those Hermes bands fit on the regular watch, right? You don't need them. They all are interchangeable.
Yes. Georgia has hers on a rose gold sport watch.
Oh, right. It does feel weird to have the band be more expensive than the watch, but maybe that's a regular thing. I don't know.
I mean, like, so I had so many, like, because I've had watches for years, but I've never been all horologist about it. And, like, my boss, Kevin Michalek, is, like, he's got, like, three Omegas and a bunch of Rolexes, and he's, like, a John Biggs-level collector. And, the, you know, Vince Naguyen from Slash Gear, too, they are talking about their Panerai bands that are thousands of dollars, you know? So it's a totally different, it's like audio equipment. You can spend every dollar you have on this stuff if that is what you want to do. So Apple stuff is fairly constrained. If you go to the Hermes store, even like I went to the Hermes store at SFO on my way home, and the Hermes version of the Double Tour is way more expensive than the Apple version of the Hermes. It's like $3,000 or something. Wow. So yeah, you can spend as much money as you have on this stuff if you want to. I don't recommend doing that. You know, save it for the audio equipment. But you know, it's a good way to add a little bit of fun to your existing watch.
I think I see smoke coming out of Alex's head as he's like, "Just give me a second hand. That's all I want. Like, no more bands. All I want is a second hand.
That's all I need. All I want is a second hand. Like, just a second hand. So I can look down and actually know what the real time is.
You know, to the watch kit team, Alex. Just you know, while you're next time you're in Cupertino, get a megaphone, stand out front of IL, and just go second hands.
Yeah,
seconds.
It's like I would.
You know, I think we just need to. We all need to gang up at WWDC and just walk over and go,
second hand.
In fact, maybe I'll just print t-shirts that everyone can wear at WWDC. I'll just hand them out.
Second. What time is it? I don't know because no seconds.
Yes. Well, you know, you brought up, you threw out, Alex, that you think maybe they think it makes people nervous. I wonder if that is real, like that they've thought, they've tried it.
I know, but there's so many faces. Why not just have one?
Yeah.
Just call it seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Got it. All right. My pick is a book, an actual book. It is The Upstarts by Brad Stone. It's about Uber and Airbnb, how Uber, Airbnb, and the killer companies of the new Silicon Valley are changing the world. Oh, like I said before, I like to read fiction, but I interviewed Brad Stone on Triangulation that will air in a few weeks. And it was great. He writes for Bloomberg, and you know, he wrote the big book about Amazon called The Everything Store. And this was a real page turner. I was surprised at how I kept being enthralled by this book when, you know, it ends in December of 2016. So you know the story up till then. And so much even has happened with Uber and Airbnb since then. But what I loved about it is we're, you know, as journalists, we're like tied to this relentless news cycle. And we hear all this bad news about Uber and we just say like, oh, can you believe it? And then just to read the backstory about these two companies and really unique companies that came about at a time, right after the Facebook IPO, right when Obama was inaugurated, and they came up at the same time. It's like when you think about like comedians that come up at the same time. It's like, you know, Uber and Airbnb sort of came up at the same time, and they just started this, you know, people call it the ride sharing economy, but it really, to me, and Brad Stone coins this term, I think, the trust economy, where we're putting our bodies into Ubers or into Airbnbs, and it's just this whole different thing than Amazon or Google or Facebook or any of the, or Apple for that matter, of any of the companies that came before, just really trusting these companies. It's a really great read, whether you're into business or technology, or you just want to know what's going on with these two companies that really changed the way that we move people around and store them places, for lack of a better word. So it is, it's a great book. Anybody read it or read other Brad Stone books?
No, not me. But
I think his books are great. I mean, and his articles and everything else. So, is it available on Audible yet, or is it still just?
I'm sure it is. Yeah.
It's available on Audible. I could definitely see.
You could see yourself reading it. I'm sure it is.
I'm not much of a unitasker, so I.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, yeah, it is on Audible. It's read by Dean Temple. But yeah, I think that is. I don't know. I've been trying to get myself to read real books at night instead of, you know, going through Twitter or, you know, Instagram or Facebook just to make my brain work again.
Yeah, no, I like to listen to
books. I'm sorry. I know I tweet stupid things, but, you know, it helps keep me off the streets.
You're usually asleep, Andy, by the time I'm going through Twitter in bed. So you're usually asleep by then. So, yeah, it's not you that I'm blaming.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, I was when you were talking about it, I hadn't really thought about it until you said it. But I also realized that probably one of the perfect storms of the ride sharing thing was also, the huge surge in unemployment and underemployment that happened right at about the same time that those companies were launching, that, you know, people were more willing to do that. And I know, you know, there's some folks in my, you know, I have some cousins that are actually Uber drivers, they love it. So I think that's part of when people like complain about Uber, I always think of my cousin who's tells me how great it is, because he gets to design his own day and he has his day the way he wants it and does his thing, and I'm sure that would be just as good with Lyft or anything else as well. But the, you know, I think that it's the idea of having that flexibility, I think we're just going to see more and more of. I think that kind of, so it is interesting to see how these guys are doing it. Because there's something like Uber I use almost every day. The Airbnb I won't touch. Like the idea of like staying in someone's house. So it's interesting, like the safe space thing that goes on. Like Airbnb, I'm like, no, I won't. That doesn't work for me at all. But Uber doesn't. For whatever reason, I don't know why, it doesn't bother me.
Interesting. Well, Alex, thank you so much for joining us. What is there anything that you are working on that we should know about?
I'm going to be in Austin, Texas tomorrow. And tomorrow night, if you follow me on Twitter, if you hear this, I don't know where to go. I don't know where to go yet, but I'm going to try to do a meetup. So, keep your eye on Twitter, my Twitter feed, or if you follow me on Facebook or whatever, I'll post it. You know, my Twitter will post to my Facebook, that kind of thing. So, but I'll do something later today where I announce where I'm going to go. But I'm always looking, especially to meet people who are in production, because we're always looking for people to know in the local area, but even just people who are listeners or whatever, I'll tweet it out, put it on Facebook, in the next couple hours, as soon as I figure out exactly where I want to meet. But somewhere in Austin, I'm sure we'll find a cool place to go. So if you're in Austin, stay tuned and check that out.
Awesome. AlexLindsay.com, PixelCore.com. How about you, Renee? Anything that we need to know that you're working on?
Just MacBook Weekly.
Nothing else.
No, same. Yeah, we're covering all the new stuff. So if you have any questions about iOS 10.3 or watchOS, you know, I forget what I'm on, 3.2, all the new stuff. Serenity Caldwell, Lori Gill, Mike Sargent, the entire team just killing it. So go down there. I had very little to do with it this time, but they did an amazing job. So just go to imore.com and check it out.
Ooh, Pad and Quill's leather backpack. Ooh, that looks nice. Got to check that out.
They do great stuff.
ReneeRitchie.com, imore.com. Andy, what are you working on besides tweeting funny things?
Tomorrow I'm going to be covering the Samsung Galaxy S8 launch, so a lot of stuff about Android, not anything that anyone here would be interested in. But I got a couple Apple reviews coming up. That's first one's going to be next Tuesday, I think, if it gets through editing. Either it'll take 5 days for them to edit it, or it's going to take 4 days for me to cut it down to 800 words so they can get it out in less than an hour. So we'll see which one wins out first.
CWOB.com and Anatko, at Anatko on Twitter. And thank you for joining me. Leo will be back next week. I had a great time. Hopefully he will invite me back again. Definitely going to make the title something about putting in hot tubs. So Leo will come back probably. And yeah, thanks. Tune in. You can get it all. Download the show, subscribe, and subscribe at twit.tv. That's where you can find all the ways to subscribe to the audio, to the video. You can get it anywhere. And I am Megan Maroney. I'm on Tech News Today every day at 4 p.m. Pacific, and iOS Today every Monday. And you can, of course, email me at any time at megan@twit.tv. And you can follow me on Twitter, and I welcome your DMs. I'm at Megan Maroney. Thanks so much for joining us.